right. Thanks for tuning into The Rib, and have a good rest of your summer. Enjoy it while you can.
CITR 101.9 FM presents News 101, Vancouver's volunteer-produced student and community newscast. Now, here's your host, Rita Farkas.
Good evening. In the news this week, an update on the listeria outbreak and the Conservative government adjusts their controversial unborn victims bill. We'll have all this plus your weather forecast coming up this half hour right here on News 101. TransLink is expecting an increase in commuters around Metro Vancouver this September, and they're making the largest increase to transit services ever. TransLink will add 80,000 hours of bus service over the next 3 months. The rise in commuters is partially due to students heading back to school this fall, but is mostly due to the increase in gas prices, causing more commuters to turn to transit options and leave their cars at home. The increased transit services were announced by TransLink spokesman Drew Snyder, who said that 8 new buses will be put on the new number 33 route to UBC, and more buses will be put on UBC-bound routes from Brentwood Mall and Metrotown Station. Some, however, are still critical of TransLink's ability to handle the fast-approaching commuter crunch. Beth Grayer, spokesperson for Vancouver's Bus Riders Union, maintains that TransLink is not doing enough. She says the company would need at least 500 new buses in order to alleviate the strain that increased ridership will put on Vancouver's transit system this fall. Now, with a look at more local and provincial news, here are News 101 reporters Charlotte Nobles and Rita Farkas.
If you're using the SkyTrain over the next few days, be sure to carry change for the ticket vending machines. TransLink says they're having trouble with some of their machines that accept debit and credit cards. They don't know when the problem will be fixed, but until then, you're asked to use cash or purchase your SkyTrain to purchase your SkyTrain tickets. Despite the broken machines, all travelers are expected to have a valid ticket or monthly pass in any fare paid zones.
And BC environmentalists are hoping to add some valuable waterfront property to a provincial mountain park in the Kootenays. The Land Conservancy of BC and the Valhalla Foundation for Ecology and Social Justice, part of the Valhalla Wilderness Society, are in negotiations to buy up a stretch of shoreline on Slocan Lake on the southern boundary of Valhalla Provincial Park. The provincial park north of Slocan and Castlegar encompasses most of the Valhalla range of the Selkirk Mountains and was created in 1983. Long strips of the waterfront in the area are privately owned, however. Bill Turner, the executive director of the Conservancy, says the 1.7-kilometer stretch of property the group is hoping to buy it, as it is vital to the park's ecological health. That lakefront property in question is worth approximately $1.5 million. The groups are hoping to cover about $300,000 of that through private donations. The rest of the purchase price is expected to come from the government donations and other sources. The groups have until December to close the purchase.
And cutting over to national news, earlier today, Justice Minister Rob Nicholson announced that the Conservative government will be drafting a new bill that will replace the current Bill C-484 in an effort to reduce controversy about the Conservative position on abortion. Amidst rising speculation that a federal election will soon be called, Bill C-484, the Unborn Victims of Crime Act, will be replaced with one that will instead focus on penalizing criminals who harm pregnant women. The Unborn Victims of Crime Act was introduced as a private member's bill by Tory MP Ken Epp of Edmonton and passed second reading this spring. The bill would have made killing an unborn child when a pregnant woman is slain a separate offense from the actual attack on the woman. The bill created controversy as it appeared to give the fetus human rights separate from those of the mother. Although the bill was passed, it was criticized by pro-abortion advocates, and the Canadian Medical Association voted to oppose the bill. Liberal leader Stéphane Dion was also critical of the bill and challenged Prime Minister Stephen Harper to clarify his views on abortion. Prime Minister Stephen Harper has responded to the criticism by the Canadian Medical Association and Mr. Dion by stating that the Conservative government will not reopen the debate on abortion. The Conservatives' new bill will punish criminals who commit violence against pregnant women, but will not introduce any controversy regarding fetal rights. The new bill will, instead, add the fact of a female victim's pregnancy to the aggravating factors to be considered by a sentencing judge.
And with the increase in fuel prices, airlines are looking for ways to cut prices. Jazz, a regional carrier for Air Canada, is combating the rising transportation costs by removing most of the inflatable life vests from its planes to save weight. Manon Stewart, spokesperson for Air Canada, announced the decision today and said that Transportation Canada requires only one means of flotation when the aircraft is operating flights within 50 nautical miles from the shore, and the airline will continue to carry seat cushion flotation devices. Manon also announced that life vests for babies have not been removed. Tim Hinton, a former top aviation official at the Transportation Safety Board, supports Jazz's decision and stated that although it may be unclear as to how much weight will be saved by removing the life vests, when you're trying to save every bit of money you can to make the airline more productive, every bit counts. It's time for a quick break now, but stay tuned to CITR for more news following these public service announcements.
AMS Connect is a brand new service that offers a variety of ways for you to get connected to your campus, your city, and your world. We provide online listings of local volunteer opportunities and internship placements that allow you to gain valuable job experience and explore your passions outside of the classroom. The Connect office also facilitates volunteer placements abroad. Do stuff, get involved. For more information, call 604-822-9268 or you can go to their website at www.ams.ubc.ca/vex.
Hey, are you ready to head back to school in September?
For sure, but I'm worried that I won't be able to cover all my costs this year.
Have you ever done work study? I did it in the past, and it was a great experience and good money. You just need to be a Canadian citizen or a permanent resident.
And studying at UBC?
You got it. If you want to earn decent coin, pad your resume, and work on campus, work study is where the smart money's at. Just go online to Career Services and check out the listings.
That's solid advice. I'll definitely check out work study this year.
For more information on getting hired for a work study job, visit www.students.ubc.ca/work study.
Thunderstorms, see the lightning flashing. Thunderstorms.
Thank you for stopping that. If you actually want to learn more about weather, join the UBC Storm Club. For more information, email us at stormubc@gmail.com. Stop playing those cheesy songs and tune into News 101 Mondays and Fridays for your CITR weather forecast.
GoGreenShuttles.com is running a direct shuttle service to the Burning Man Festival from Vancouver. Buses depart Vancouver on August 24th at 5 p.m. and travel through the night towards the desert. Our buses will be leaving the festival en route back to Vancouver on September 1st, also at 5 p.m. Pack all the gear you need. We're renting a trailer and stopping for groceries in Reno. Return travel is just $455 and available at GoGreenShuttles.com.
I'm Peter Mansbridge, and you're listening to CITR 101.9 FM in Vancouver.
This is News 101, and the current time is 5:12. The Canadian Food Inspection Agency confirmed there is a direct link between an outbreak of listeria and meat produced by the Maple Leaf Company. 21 confirmed listeriosis cases, including 4 deaths, are linked to their products. All of the ready-to-eat foods produced at Maple Leaf's Toronto area plant have been removed from store shelves. Garfield Balsam from the Canadian Food Inspection Agency expects the number of listeriosis cases to rise in the next several weeks. He says the onset of symptoms can take up to 70 days to appear after eating contaminated food. A 64-year-old Vancouver Island man is one of the 4 Canadians who have died from exposure to listeria. He may have been infected from meat that was served at the Cowichan District Hospital. And most recently today, the BC Centre for Disease Control has confirmed a Cranbrook woman has fallen ill with listeria as well. The Interior Health Authority says the woman may have consumed the product while she was in hospital. With more on other national news, here once again are Rita Farkas and Charlotte Nobles.
In related news to the listeria outbreak story, a Calgary-based distributor of ready-made sandwiches has recalled dozens of products sold in Saskatchewan and Alberta, saying some of them could contain meat products tainted with the listeria bacteria. Only a handful of products were named in Maple Leaf's initial recall, but the company has since pulled 220 product lines as a precautionary measure. Maple Leaf also temporarily shut down the Toronto plant to conduct tests and assess safety procedures. For a list of potentially unsafe Maple Leaf foods, check the company's website at mapleleaf.ca.
A new study from the University of Guelph, Ontario, suggests that many consumers aren't getting what they bargained for when it comes to fish. The study, being published this week in the Journal of Food Research International, tested the DNA of 100 fish samples taken from restaurants and markets in Guelph, Ontario, Toronto, and New York City. The study found that 25% of fish is mislabeled. As an example, Atlantic halibut was often sold as Pacific halibut, and samples of Atlantic cod and Acadian redfish were mislabeled and sold as red snapper, a higher-priced fish. Robert Hannard, the Associate Director for the Canadian Barcode of Life, Network is concerned about the study's findings. Not only is there concern about consumer fraud, but there could also be a risk to public safety. If a person has allergies to a certain type of fish and purchased a mislabeled product, the consequences could be deadly. Researchers also noted that some labels for endangered fish species have been swapped. Robert Hanner says consumers may think they're buying eco-friendly fish when in reality they could actually still be buying exploited species and not even know it.
And you may want to think twice before pulling up the dandelion growing on your lawn. Raymond Liu, who will be harvesting his first crop of dandelions this week, says that the commonly found flower is both a cash crop and much harder to grow than one would think. Mr. Liu, a farmer in PEI, will be selling the dandelions to Japan, where the roots of the flower are used to make a beverage similar to coffee. Due to the declining potato market in the province, PEI farmers have been looking for ways to diversify their crops. Formerly a potato and livestock farmer, Liu discovered the market for dandelion roots on a recent trip to Japan that was focused on finding out what he could provide to the Japanese market. Mr. Liu's business contact in Japan mentioned that his secretary was familiar with the Book of Anne of Green Gables, and since women do most of the buying in Japan, Liu feels confident that the Japanese affinity for Prince Edward Island will help him be successful in the Japanese market.
A leading criminologist says Canadian police forces need to be more proactive in recruiting from cultural communities. James Drennan, dean for the School of Business and Technology at Sir Stanford Fleming College in Ontario, says policing has evolved over the last 15 years, but not far enough. He says confidence in the police needs to be renewed among first and second generation immigrants, and policing needs to be promoted as a viable career opportunity. However, some communities do not trust the police. Fo Niemi, the executive director for the Center for Research Action on Race Relations, says there are at least two factors preventing cultural communities from seeking work in public policing. He says the fight against terrorism and street gangs both distance certain communities from the police. Some communities interpret the crackdown as an emphasis on getting tough on people of color instead of tough on crime.
And in international news, researchers from the epidemiology department in Staten Serum Institute in Copenhagen have found evidence that inhaling incense increases the risk of developing squamous cell carcinomas in the upper respiratory tract, which includes the nose, sinuses, tongue, mouth, and larynx. Along with possible carcinogens, incense, which is a combination of plant materials and oils, releases smoke that contains particulate matter that gets caught in the lungs. When burning incense indoors, the concentration of these carcinogens and particulate matter can be higher than the concentration of particulate matter in secondhand tobacco smoke. Researchers stress that although incense use did not appear to increase the overall risk of lung cancer, the findings do suggest that burning incense increases the risk of squamous cell carcinoma of the lung. The study, which was published in the October 1st issue of the journal Cancer, reveals the potential public health concern of burning incense in public places. This is particularly problematic in cultures found in Asia, North Africa, and among some Inuit populations, where the burning of incense is part of daily life. The study does stress that more research needs to be done to determine which are the least harmful forms of incense. In the meantime, researchers suggest burning incense less often and improving ventilation while it is burning.
And it's time for another break, but when we come back, we'll hear some additional international news from Free Speech Radio News. You're listening to CITR 101.9 FM in Vancouver.
GoGreenCellos.com and the Pemberton Festival now have a direct cello service all weekend long from Vancouver right to the festival gates. GoGreenCellos.com is your alternative to high fuel and parking costs, with return tickets just $70 when purchased before July 10th.
That's right, there are ways to go green without spending a lot of green.
Want to find out what going green really means? Want to find ways to save money and conserve resources like energy and water?
GoGreenCellos.com. You do the partying, we'll get you there.
Are you looking to fulfill your passion for justice? Join us. The Vancouver Rape Relief and Women's Shelter is looking for women volunteers to help us run our 24-hour rape crisis line and transition house for battered women and their children. Training is 6 weeks long and free. Training starts now. Please call to book a training interview. Phone us at 604-872-8212.
Sealed with a Kiss and CITR 101.9 FM presents the Stanley Park Singing Exhibition, a two-day musical extravaganza with a focus on the art of song singing. Sunday, August 31st features Nico Case, Andrew Bird, Destroyer, Deerhoof, The Evaporators, while Monday, September the 1st features The New Pornographers, Black Mountain, Stevie Jackson of Bell and Sebastian, The 1900s, and Biscuit. Both shows are at the Malcolm Bowl in Stanley Park, doors at 3:30 p.m. Advanced tickets are on sale now at Zulu Records, Red Cat Records, High Life Records, and all Ticketmaster locations. Brought to you by Sealed with a Kiss and CITR 101.9 FM, Vancouver.
Are you a band or musician located in Vancouver or the Lower Mainland? We're now accepting entries for Shindig 2008. All styles are welcome, whether you're a solo country artist or a 10-piece punk band.
You'll need to send us a minimum 3-song demo of original material, plus your contact information. Put everything in an envelope. Mail it or drop it off before August 8th to Shindig 2008, CITR Radio, number 233/6138, Sub Boulevard, Vancouver, BC, V6T1Z1, Canada.
We also love web-based submissions, such as ones via MySpace or electronic press kits. Please email shindig.08@gmail.com.
You know, as much as I hate to brag about Shindig, I must say tonight we got a Shindig for you that is so far in, it's out of sight.
Welcome back to News 101 in the summer. I'm Marie Bernard, coming to you live from the Student Union Building at UBC. Thanks for being with us tonight. In international news, we now go to FSRN with an update on the situation in Georgia.
Lawmakers approved a resolution Monday in support of independence for Georgia's breakaway regions of South Ossetia and Abkhazia. The non-binding votes come as the U.S. State Department accused Russia of violating the ceasefire agreement with Georgia. More than 2 weeks have passed since the confrontation over Georgia's breakaway region in South Ossetia erupted into open warfare. Since then, the Russian military has taken control over much more than South Ossetia and Abkhazia, which ceded from Georgia in the early 1990s. FSRN's Deborah Wild is in the Georgian capital of Tbilisi with the story.
In the capital, Tbilisi, traffic has picked up again. People are trying to proceed with their lives, but the situation is far from normal. Georgian authorities have no control over two-thirds of the country, and the Russians have done very little to meet their self-imposed deadline for pulling their forces. Roads and railway connecting eastern and western Georgia have been cut off, leaving many families separated. Rati Santiashvili is a 19-year-old student who comes from Gori, a town outside of the conflict zone which has been cordoned off by Russian troops. The widespread reports of Ossetian militias accompanying Russian troops looting and pillaging worry Rati.
Well, I think that's terrible. I think all these things happening, and I think that I don't even know how my town looks like right now because I left it like several months ago because I have to move down into Tbilisi and study and work. So the last time I saw Gori, it was real beautiful, and I don't even know how my house looks like. I have like two houses down there, one in the apartment and one private house, and I'll be real sad if I see that everything is destroyed.
More than 128,000 people have been displaced by the latest conflict, according to UNHCR. Most of them had to leave with nothing but their clothes on their backs, like Tamas Utinashvili, who lost his leg in the First South Ossetian War in the early 1990s. He has fled from Upper Liachwi, a gorge north of Tsun Valley in South Ossetia, to one of the many refugee shelters around Tbilisi. For Tamás, it is clear what caused this crisis.
Ach, scenarist autorits, da dansgueli regisorits da shemsrulebelis rusi iqo. Davidan bolonde.
The initiative came from Russia. Russia had planned everything, and Ossetians became the victims. We saw how Ossetian positions were bombed alongside with Georgian positions in Tsin Valley. Tsin Valley doesn't look like a city anymore. It is completely destroyed. Russia's aim was to kill as many Ossetians as possible, to blame the Georgian side for the genocide of South Ossetians and to get rid of them as well as the Georgian government.
Many believe Moscow aimed to punish Georgia for its pro-Western course and its aspiration to join NATO and the European Union by provoking an armed conflict in Georgia's breakaway region of South Ossetia. After a month of escalating tensions with shelling, explosions and killings, the Georgian government started a massive offensive for the South Ossetian capital, Tsun Valley. There was no other choice, Georgians officials claim, after receiving intelligence that Russian troops were crossing through the rocky tunnel from Russia into Georgian territory. Did the Georgian government make a catastrophic mistake by walking into a trap prepared long in advance and set by Russia? David Usupashvili, leader of the Republican Party.
It's hard to call a mistake because the Georgian government was warned by many people here in Georgia and by our friends from Europe, from the US, that the government had to do everything possible in order to avoid military confrontation with Russia. We were talking for months that Russia is seeking for a momentum. They have ready a plan to do something which would disable Georgia from NATO integration.
President Saakashvili has partly blamed the international community, the West and Europe in particular, for not taking his warnings that Russia was up to something more serious and for not doing more to prevent it. Georgi Baramidze, State Minister for European and NATO Integration, explains.
You know, when Europe and the United States is united and firm and clearly committed to stop this kind of aggressions or prevent this kind of aggression, this kind of aggression never happened.
Many Georgians have felt abandoned by the international community. As fighting erupted, many foreigners left. But some chose to stay to make an important point, such as the small group of foreigners demonstrating in downtown Tbilisi. One of them is Jonathan Kulik, an American national who works for the Georgian Foundation for Strategic and International Studies.
I'm here to show my solidarity with Georgia and show that whatever international leaders may do or not do, that people around the world do care about what happens there. And it's my home. It takes a lot to get me out of my home.
As long as that home is occupied by Russian troops, few Georgians are willing to speak about the questions they have. Many Georgians doubt that the government made the right decision. Nelly Akobaya, a 22-year-old translator, says.
Yes, it's not the right time to talk about it now because the crisis is has not finished yet. We do not have the right, I think, to talk about whether our government was wrong or right at the moment because we need to be as one. We need to be as one, yes, in the eyes of everybody, and especially taking into consideration the fact that Georgia may be at risk of changing a president and the change may happen from Russia.
So once the last Russian soldier has left Georgian soil, President Mikhail Saakashvili will have to face another challenge, this time coming from his own people. For Free Speech Radio News, I'm Deborah Wild in Tbilisi, Georgia.
And thanks, as always, to FSRN for that piece. Right now, it is 5:30 p.m. and time for this week's weather forecast with Alice Wong.
Here's your forecast for August 25th to 31st. It should be a bit drier this week than the last, although we will get a few scattered showers throughout the week thanks to another low-pressure system. For Monday evening to overnight, a weak cold front will be passing through the BC coast, leading to an overnight low of 10 degrees. Tuesday, high of 18, starts off sunny with variable clouds, then rain starts to move in by the evening. Wednesday, mostly overcast with scattered showers, high of 17. Thursday, partly cloudy with a chance of showers, high of 18. The precipitation should move off by Friday with mostly variable clouds and a high of 19. Saturday, mainly sunny with a high of 17. Sunday, looking a bit wet at this point, so squeeze in all your outdoor activities and beach outings for Saturday. Enjoy this last week before the start of fall term and cross off any remaining items on your summer to-do list. Currently, it's 18 degrees and sunny with a few clouds at YVR. That's your weather this week, brought to you by the Storm Club of UBC. Contact us at stormubc@gmail.com for more info. For News 101, I'm Alice Huang.
Thank you, Alice. And that's our program for Monday, August 25th, 2008. Today's newscast was brought to you entirely by volunteer efforts. And if you'd like to share your comments, give us a hot news tip, or get involved with the show, contact us. Our phone number is 604-822-5334, or you can email news@citr.ca. Rita Farkas produced this radio program. For more news, join us next Monday at 5 p.m. for the next edition of News 101. For the entire news team at CITR, I'm Marie Bernard. Thanks for listening. Stay tuned for Career Fast Track coming up next on 101.9 FM CITR.
Vancouver Pride Society invites you to volunteer. This year at Pride, we're looking for parade marshals. If you want to help out and make a difference and get the best seat at the parade, join us. VancouverPride.ca for more info.
Menstruation, the final frontier. This is the research of SEMCOR, its continuing mission to explore strange yet familiar body parts, to seek out new information unfamiliar to the medical profession, to boldly go where no man has gone before. Tired of frantically raising your shields with those unexpected periods? Fed up of not really understanding what's going on in the nether regions of your space? Come to the Center for Menstrual Cycle and Ovulation Research and learn how to live long and prosper through all phases of your cycle. SEMCOR can give you the tools to chart your way through your cycle so it seems like a safe space rather than the outer reaches of the galaxy. Our prime directive is to educate women about their bodies so they can have peace and a long life. To that end, we're recruiting volunteers for a menstrual cycle and ovulation study involving a personal log and urine samples, all completed in the privacy of your own quarters. Participants must be between the ages of 20 and 40, have menstruated in the last 3 months, and not be taking any hormonal medications such as birth control pills. Resistance is futile. Set your coordinates to www.semcor.ubc.ca or call 604-875-5960. We're the Center for Menstrual Cycle and Ovulation Research.